Okay, great. Thank you, folks, for your patience. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. Great. thank you again for your patience and obviously a little bit of enthusiasm sprinkled in there. So the topic I'm going to talk to you a little bit about is this issue around eliminating disparities in clinical trials. My name is Garth Grimm. I'm the Deputy Assistant Secretary for the Office of Minority Health in the Department of Health and Human Services. Basically, what we do and what I do is we lead the federal efforts at the Department of Health and Human Services in D.C. around this issue of eliminating health disparities. In the interest of full disclosure, the presentation I'm going to give to you here is really about a partnership, not just something emanating from the federal government, but really a partnership between us and the federal government and some very intuitive and hardworking folks at the Baylor College of Medicine. I'd like to start off by recognizing those folks, Armin Weinberg and his staff, from Baylor, who really have been the impetus for this overall idea that we've been putting forward in terms of not just from a policy perspective, but some of the grassroots activities in eliminating disparities in clinical trials. So this issue about how important is it to really focus on this issue around eliminating disparities in clinical trials. This is a slide that shows you just from an opinion perspective, when you talk to folks and when you really engage folks in terms of what do folks in the community believe that how important is this issue of conducting medical or health research to understanding and eliminating these differences. And you can see by this slide that about 91% of individuals polled in this poll thought that clinical trials and conducting research on folks from different minority backgrounds was particularly important. I'll give you an anecdotal story that I often and have told Armin in prior presentations around just how important folks in the community, folks who are out there, believe this issue of clinical trials is. When we launched this activity, we went around doing a number of media and radio tours. And I did a couple of interviews on NPR on some of the local radio stations, and people would call in. And people would call in from the community with just their thoughts and their ideas around this issue of clinical trials. And one of the things that happened about a couple of times is people would call in because they just wanted to participate. They didn't know, you know, we would sometimes get into talking about issues around certain drugs and certain, there was this very popular drug that was out on the market at that time, about to be out on the market, Bidil, which many of you might be very familiar with, a drug for heart failure. And people who didn't have heart failure would call in and want to know how can they get involved in trials on this drug, just because they thought that they wanted to be that engaged in the overall process. And one of the things that we have not been very effective in doing, and when I say we, I mean folks across the spectrum in terms of this issue of looking at health disparities and the intersection around clinical trials, one of the things that we have not done a very good job of is engaging the community. And what we do find is it is not that there is a lack of willingness in the community, it's a lack of proactive engagement in terms of getting folks integrally involved and having that outreach to people around this issue on clinical trials. So I think this is reflected in this overall population poll, but more importantly, we do see this from folks who are involved in research, involved in general clinical community, and folks who are involved in working with community-based organizations, that the community does want to be involved in this issue around clinical trials. So who is underrepresented, and who are we targeting when we talk about this issue of minority populations? Well, we're talking about underserved populations across the board. Racial and ethnic minority populations. We're talking about adolescents. We're talking about women. We're talking about folks from rural areas. We're talking about the uninsured. We're talking about the elderly. We're obviously talking about additionally folks with special needs, both folks from the disabled and folks with other chronic illnesses. What you end up happening is you have this multiplier effect. So you have folks who are from a minority background who are also women, who live in rural communities, who make up a larger proportion of the uninsured, who might happen to be elderly, and who might have additional chronic illnesses. So you really have this multiplier effect going from one issue to the next, and you end up getting not just the M to the squared or the M to the third, but you end up getting this exponential effect as you start to look at the need and the integration of those folks into clinical trials. It's important to understand as well, and I was talking about this issue of outreach from the community perspective and the fact that I think engaging our community is an integral part of this overall effort. But when you talk about the, when you understand more about this era that we're in terms of era of evidence-based medicine, this is really talking about as well driving down to pharmacokinetics, genomics, and understanding how individual drugs apply to everybody in our population. So this multiplier effect starts to become a little bit more purposeful. Now, here's an interesting thing that many folks don't know. When you look at the full spectrum of clinical trials that are conducted, in actuality, the vast majority of clinical trials are not conducted via federal funds. Really, only about 20% of clinical trials are sponsored by NIH, sponsored by FDA, sponsored by other federal entities. The vast majority of clinical trials, around 80% of clinical trials, is actually in the private sector. That's why when we started talking to the folks at Baylor who had been working with other individuals in the private sector about this particular initiative, we were very, very, very interested, because we're talking about not just ourselves, but how do we engage folks in the academic community and folks within the private sector as well around this issue of recruiting more minorities into clinical trials. This is a slide looking at publicly funded or NCI publicly funded treatment trials from January 2003 to January 2005. And what you see here is, for the most part, this is just within the public realm, the vast majority of folks from either racial or ethnic background are non-minorities. And we're talking about a proportion that is not reflective of the overall population, about 88 to 89% of those folks being Caucasian. And when you look at ethnicity, about 95% of those folks who are non-Hispanic or non-Latino. So really what we've seen is a lack of reflection of our clinical trial demographics in comparison to that of the overall population. So here's a description of the project. And as I said to you before, even though you're hearing about it mainly from me, this really is a cooperative project between us, the Office of Minority Health, the Office of Women's Health, other folks within the federal government, as well as our very interested and our very engaged partners from Baylor, who really led this effort and kind of pulled us in. Baylor had previously been working with a number of individuals from the private sector and the pharmaceutical community, and then engages in this overall process. And what you see here that's illustrated quite nice, and I really like the slide, is this long road that we're on, and how we started on this road back in about September of 2006. And we started with this overall planning process and starting to bring folks together from a variety of different backgrounds, folks from the medical world, folks from the policy world, folks who are engaged in a variety of different areas. But more importantly, when we started to talk to the key experts and stakeholders, one of those experts that we and that the folks from Baylor were very proactive in including were the patients. And the patient population was a very significant part of this overall group in terms of looking at making that connection between the 10,000-foot level and the grassroots level. There was a national policy roundtable that looked at this whole idea of whole-scale change and how do you really start to move the overall process forward. And then to serve as kind of the brain trust or the thinking behind all of these thought patterns, the groups were organized into opportunity teams. And I like the idea of calling it an opportunity team as opposed to just working groups, because the whole idea here is that they would continue to identify opportunities for improvement in the process. And these folks were volunteers who were some worked in the federal government, some worked in the private sector, some worked in academia, and some worked in all various parts of the overall stakeholder process. And again, just to emphasize, a lot of these folks were patients who brought that experience to the table. And they work to refine this idea in terms of policy and guidance and thought patterns that should go into this process. And those meetings took place over about a 9-month time period and really launched us down the road in terms of what we needed to be looking at around recruiting more minorities into the clinical trial process. This is an ongoing road, and even though you see an end of the road here, really what is illustrated is that we have to keep on moving in terms of how we move forward with this process. We launched this activity at the National Press Club in April of 2007. Am I correct, Armin? 2008. I get my years mixed up. I spent too much time on the road. But in April of 2008, We launched this at the National Press Club, and it was a wonderful event. I mean, the press club was packed to the brim, and we had folks from a lot of the major media networks. And again, it shows that not only are folks at the various tiers in terms of interest, you're not just talking about media interest, but as I illustrated to you earlier, you know, the community wants to be more engaged in this overall process. So it's about how we make that connection and connectivity for the greater good. This I like. In terms of kind of a diagram in terms of illustrating the overall policy context. So it shows right at the very center in terms of the core of this of all of our activities is the patients, are the underrepresented participants. And then as you kind of go out from the center of the core, you start to look at who are some of the participating stakeholders, folks from the community, folks from research research institutions, folks from the government and folks from industry, and folks from nonprofits. Then you start to look at some of the supporting stakeholders, some of the insurance companies, other nonprofit organizations, professional education institutions, and then this issue of publications. Let me just kind of stick a pin here. One of the activities that we also have that's part of that road, if you go back to my prior slide, is we actually pulled together an editorial leadership board. So we've pulled together all the major editors from, you know, the Annals of Internal Medicine and all of the big journals that have been helping to propagate science over the last many decades, and talk to them about how do we start including information for authors, how do we start setting a standard where you as the kind of gate holders to the publication of this material, how do you hold other folks accountable to make sure that they included folks from underrepresented groups. And they were actually very, 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 very much engaged, and they wanted to talk about how we can work it through this process. And they came up with some interesting recommendations, which I'll hopefully get to touch on a little bit later. So here is just kind of a diagram showing some of the connectivity between connecting folks from various groups to the media, to advocacy organizations, professional associations, and then back and forth to IRB. So just showing how the full connectivity in terms of looking at this overall wheel. So two major outcomes, in addition to not just bringing together those opportunity teams and not just bringing together some folks from the editorial boards of the major journals, but we're looking at some additional concrete outcomes. And we'll continue to look at some additional concrete outcomes as we move this process out in the future. But the two I want to talk about is the Backpack Project. So when you look at the literature that is in place around promising practices to kind of bring folks into clinical trials, you find that for the most part, they're either focused only on a single disease or a problem area. They're known only to the specialists or those who are already familiar with the field. So the oncologists understand the oncology literature. The cardiologists understand the cardiology literature. But there's not a lot of crosstalk, and there's not a lot of general access in terms of folks who are working on this who are not involved in those specialty arenas in terms of understanding some of the overall lessons learned, because we tend to communicate in silos. So it's not easily accessible or useful to community-based practitioners who are actively engaged in clinical trial recruitments or on the ground. So we decided to look at how do we create a one-stop shop or a forum where folks who are working on the grassroots level, who are working on the ground, and folks who are conducting clinical trials, who are working across different entities, where can they go and get information on best practices? So our goals were to identify policies, projects, programs, and promising practices, and to make these materials and resources available to researchers, advocates, policymakers, and healthcare providers. So it's really to break down some of those silos of communication. So we call that the Backpack Project, and we partnered that with something called the CLASS Act Project. And I always love the way we come up with nice creative acronyms. So how many of you here are familiar with the CLASS standards? Good. So a good amount of you are familiar with the CLASS standards that emanated from my office a couple of years ago, which were the National Standards for Culturally and Linguistically Appropriate Services. So we looked at how do we then now apply the CLASS standards to clinical trials and really make it a CLASS Act. So hence the acronym in terms of the CLASS Act as part of this overall project. So it's really looking at how do we apply clinical trials, I'm sorry, the class standards to the clinical trial arena. So we partnered that with the Backpack Project, and we call it the Backpack Project because we thought of this like a backpack where you kind of put all the information in and it was accessible to other individuals who wanted to be able to understand some of those best practices. So the CLASS Act project, like I said earlier, is around the national standards for culturally and linguistically appropriate services. We worked with the folks from Baylor and other individuals at really applying this towards the clinical trial arena. And this is the website, which is in its beta version now, where folks can really go and see some of the information about applying the CLASS standards to clinical trials. And in addition, when you go to this website, you'll see more information on the Backpack Project, which really is a one-stop resource on all the various forms of activities, or all of the best practices, I should say, around recruiting more minorities into clinical trials. And I think I'm actually exactly on time. I am. Good. You guys weren't seeing all of the indicators I was getting here. And thank you very much for your guidance. But suffice to say that this is the website out of Baylor. And like I said, you know, really, it would be a mistake for not recognizing Armin Weinberg and his staff at Baylor for the tremendous leadership that they've provided on a national level with the ICC and a number of other organizations, but more importantly, for motivating us within the federal government and other folks in the private sector to really look at some more proactive moves that we can do and some more proactive activities that we can undertake in terms of recruiting more minorities into clinical trials. So I'm going to stop there. There are brochures that we have on this project that will be available from at the door as you walk on your way out. So I'll stop there. Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely.